Welcome, everybody. It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The coaching perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you here in studio and with our guest, Sylvia Becker-Hill, in studio also. A returning guest, I might say. It's great to have you back, Sylvia.
Yes, I'm happy to be too.
Well, we're going to talk today. Her topic is soulful organizations. I'm going to leave it at that, and we'll get to it in a minute. But before we do, I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com, or you can reach me at 714-726-8354. Well, let's get to our show for today. Soulful organizations, what you can do to be at the forefront of organizational evolution. Well, let me give you some background. Sylvia is an award-winning executive coach on both sides of the Atlantic. Boy, that's great. She's pioneered new coaching models and business concepts in Germany and successfully transferred her business to the United States during some difficult economic times. As an executive coach, change strategist, trainer, public speaker, and published author, Sylvia's passion for life and work is contagious. I'm on the edge of my seat. She's got me all fired up. She brings creativity and joy to all she does, and she leaves her audience always wanting more. She was the first German professional certified coach in 2002, endorsed by the ICF in Germany. She holds an MA in philosophy from the Heinrich Heine University in Dusseldorf and a BA in administrative science from the College of Public Administration in Cologne. Sylvia, welcome back to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Thank you for the lovely welcome. I'm so happy to be back.
Oh, we're so excited to have you here. And excited for today's topic, soulful, got to get that straight, organizations. And you subtitled it, what you can do to be at the forefront of organizational evolution. And I like the thought evolution, that organizations are evolutions. A thought-provoking dialogue inspired by Frederick, and how do you pronounce his last name?
Laloux.
His book, Reinventing Organizations. And I might just say, Sylvia turned me on to this. Fascinating book. Not an easy read, but a definitely interesting read. So I would highly recommend it. And I will post that reference on our podcast for those of you who want to follow up on it. Well, what are we talking about tonight, Sylvia?
Well, I found the book in my research to find answers to the questions, what can we do to answer the fact that our economic system is fundamentally broken? And what I mean with that is, when you read about all these horrendous statistics that over more than two-thirds of all employees are disengaged from their jobs. That means most employees drag themselves every morning unhappily to work and are happy when it's 5 p.m. or whenever the time is they can go home. And they spend most of their lifetime there. For me, this is heartbreaking. I think we can't go on living like that. And it's not only that this is on the lower ranks of the hierarchies of organizations. My coach clients, they are presidents, CEOs, they are the top leaders, and also they, behind closed doors, they tell me, Sylvia, I'm so done with that. I'm so tired. I work my butt up, and it's just always the same, and I waste my life in endless, fruitless meetings, and the overload of work time and hours, and my freedom and the power to do what I wanted to do here in this company gets cut down and down every month more and more. So there's a deep, I think, pain inside the human soul of our working populations, and we are not doing anything about it. And I think we have to. And this was the reason why I was looking out for new answers and new paradigms how we can address that.
And you know, I think it doesn't make any difference whether you're a business coach or a life coach. What I hear in feedback from coaches that I'm in contact with is the number one topic is this issue of what's next? This can't be all there is.
Yes, and also there's a deep longing in people nowadays. They want to have a fulfillment, a sense of fulfillment and purpose at their work. This is something 100 years ago, no one has looked into it. There are people who are just happy to make the ends meet and make money for a living. But now people want more. Their soul is longing for more. That's the reason why I chose the title for today, Soulful Organizations, because there is a new model out there how we could lead and structure and build organizations.
Okay. So, new model. Do you want to tell us what the model is, or do you want to tell us what some of the problems are that's creating it
Let's step back and have a big picture perspective first.
Great.
So, where we have to start is to really understand that the way organizations are running right now, it's not the only way it has to be. When you look back in history, you can see there's already, when you look back, a historic evolution of change of different kinds of organizations. When you look way back, first organizations, when we were still living in tribes and in caveman times, they were like organized like a wolf pack, and the one who was the strongest and could induce the biggest fear in anyone else, that person was the leader. And that took thousands of years till human beings were able to get out of that stage of the wolf pack. And then we had the kind of organization which were strongly built around a hierarchy like an army, and we can see this system of army style organization still, for example, in the Roman Catholic Church, in the government, in most schools. So there's a structure, there's a hierarchy, there's very clear who is on top. And so you see from stage to stage, when you go through history, that the metaphors, how organizations are run, changed, and every new phase of organizational structure was more powerful and able to do things the previous ones couldn't do. Like a wolf pack, they can't build domes, they can't create huge new inventions, factories or machines. Only organizations who are very well structured and organized, like an army, could do it, or then the later phase where we use the metaphor of a machine, a well-oiled machine, where you have accountability and measurements and task force and organizational development departments and OD, etc. And most organizations nowadays are in the model of this so-called working like a machine. Some are still like armies, only in the more illegal parts of society you still have the wolf pacts. And especially here we are interviewing here. We're talking to each other here in Orange County in California. Silicon Valley is a big example for the so-called paradigm of the family organizations, where culture, value, and spirit is huge, where it's from, instead of the stakeholders at the machine kind of organizations, we have now, from the shareholders in the machine model, we have now the stakeholders who are bringing their visions and their values into it. But this is not the mainstream. The mainstream of organizations is still in the model of the machines and not yet of the families. And even those in the family, they are not as fulfilled as human beings want to be. They struggle with suddenly the lack of hierarchy. There's some chaos. There are issues around decision making. There are issues around efficiency. So the newest model we will start talking about, that addresses also the problems of so-called family style organizations still have to face. But the key point here I want the listeners to get is there's a process of change constantly happening throughout history. And we are in the exciting time where the old systems stop working and something new is emerging on the horizon.
And you know, you bring a different definition to a term that isn't really new to talk about organizational structure. It's very common in talking about organizational evolution to refer to the growth cycles of a company. The startup phase, the mature phase, but that's not what we're talking about here at all.
No, we are talking more for the big picture of like really the big evolution we as humanity are going through, because these different models of organizations are a reflection of the evolution of the human consciousness. We as human beings are changing over time. I hope so. We are not the same, you and I, than we were in our cavemen and cave girl times. Yeah. So it's really the big picture of evolution, that when our consciousness in our societies change, the company, the structures, the organizations we are creating are changing too. So this is a process which is already running. So all our listeners now simply have to make a simple but profound and sometimes challenging decision. Do I want to know what's on the edge of the horizon, and do I want to align myself with that, or do I want to fight it? Because evolution is happening already. Yeah, we can't stop it. Change is right. It's out of our control. We only can be aligned with it and be productive and serve it and have the wind of the evolution in our back, or we have it against our face. Yeah? And that is a very individual, personal question everyone has to answer for themselves.
You know, Sylvia, I always have to chuckle when I introduce you or talk about you to people, because I refer to you as the lady with the brain. And they always look at me like, doesn't everybody have a brain? And, you know, the audience can't see it, but we're sitting here in the radio station, and we're sitting across from each other at a table. And in the middle of the table, Sylvia has brought her mock-up of a brain. And it is sitting here. When we talk about evolution, what is driving this change? Are we going to get back to neuroscience and the drivers that are really forcing us to adapt and look at new structures?
In our brain, there are areas wired which I like to call the ego, E-G-O, the ego in all of us. And the ego is committed to our survival, for our safety, and for the fulfillment of our needs. And the needs of human beings drive their activities, their actions, their motivation. So when the needs of people in a society are changing, the organizations who are supposed to be created to answer those needs have to change too. So for example, the need of self-realization, to have a sense of purpose in life, to experience fulfillment, is a need people who are struggling to simply make a living and to get enough food on the table for their family, they don't worry in that moment for self-realization. But still, it is a very deep core need everyone has. And organizations who are still structured like well-oiled machines, who don't care if someone has a personal vision or mission, who don't care if someone is fulfilled in their job, they are ultimately hurting the human spirit and the human soul, which ultimately hurts themselves and the bottom line, because people who are happy at work, they are high performers. They bring better performance, which again serves the bottom line. So what we are talking about is not just fluffy, pinky, woo-woo, nice, come on, let's be touchy-feely here. It shows up in numbers. There are examples out there which Frederick Laloux, the author of this inspiring book, Reinventing Organizations, has globally discovered in very different industries, who are already living, without knowing from each other, partially a new paradigm, the next one on the horizon, which he calls, with the metaphor, like living organisms. And when we want, and we will go deeper in the next minutes into that, if we want to move towards that, and our listeners have to be very careful to see what gets triggered through our conversation, because the ego in our brain doesn't like the new style of organization. Because the ego in our brain loves to be in control. The ego in our brain loves hierarchy, because in a hierarchy you know where you are, you know what your status is, you know who is above you, you know who is below you. In the new kind of organizations modeled after living organisms, you have no hierarchy. And now I have to say a sentence which probably horrifies a lot of listeners. There are no bosses.
Yeah, that's a struggle for me. That's a struggle for me. This is a, to exaggerate it, in my words, a system with no leaders, no managers.
And
self-managed.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the three key principles of the new kind of organizations is self-management. And in order to be able to be part of an organization like this, in order to be the CEO of an organization where you are not any longer the boss in the old sense of meaning, that you have the power over everyone and every decision, that is a huge challenge and attack really for your ego. So if anyone wants to grow as a leader inside this kind of organization, you have to start to look first inside yourself. For example, are you willing to give up your old sense of control, and how much are you willing to trust your employees, your staff members, your team members, that they are able to self-manage themselves? And here we go right deep into, we are getting a bit ahead of our conversation, into the issues which are like the wind in our face regarding this evolutionary step, because it all boils down what kind of image you have about human beings. Do you believe human beings are lazy monsters who you have to kick constantly in the butt to be motivated and to work, like theory X we developed in the 60s, yeah? Or do you have a positive, more positive kind of image of human beings, that human beings are inherently positive and driven to be creative and to express themselves and to contribute to the bigger whole, or not? Depending on that, this is again a decision everyone has to make for themselves. Depending which worldview on human beings you choose, you are either easily to adaptable for the new kind of organizations, or you are in trouble. Because if you believe theory X and human beings need to be either having the stick or the carrot to do something, that will not work with the new paradigm. And so the question is, be honest with yourself when you look at an employee, a team member, or even yourself. Do you believe we are inherently good and we love to work, we love to contribute, we love to express and bring performance, or are we just lazy monsters who need constantly the carrot or the stick? What do you believe, Doug?
Well, as a coach, I have to believe theory Y. I have to believe that people are inherently good, inherently like to work, they want to do well, and I see lots of evidence to support that.
Wonderful.
But I have to say also that I think one of the problems with this evolution is that there are a lot of people, and there are maybe times when all of us look out there and see evidence to the contrary. We see people who aren't performing, who aren't giving their best. And then we wonder, well, gee whiz, can we let them be self-managed when yes. they're just sloughing along through the day every day? So it's sort of a chicken or egg kind of thing, isn't it?
Yes. So the big debate, theory X or theory Y, which one is the right one, the key here is to understand both are right. Because it depends on you and your projection and expectations. Whatever you, if when you are a leader and you have a team of 20 people, depending which perspective you project on your team members, you will get the evidence which proves your projection to be right. That means if you believe theory X, you are right. You will experience that. If you believe theory Y, then you will get the evidence for that and you are right again. So it's not a question which theory is right. It's a question, what choice do we want to make, what kind of world we want to create? And is it easy? No, definitely not. Is every company ready to go into the direction of being more organized like a living organism? Probably not. And from the examples Frederic Laloux showed, you are not able to implement everything at once in all areas. So there are puzzle pieces where we can look at and see, okay, what are we willing to implement? And let's focus maybe in the next step on the three key principles so that our listeners can understand, okay, what is this weird new living organization? So one principle is this whole self-management. So no hierarchy, no boss. The second important principle is thriving for wholeness, which means nowadays a lot of people have the feeling when they go into their normal company, who is mainly organized like a machine, that part of them has to stay at home, that they wear a mask, that they have to turn on a certain personality to function at work, and that their private lives or their personal dreams or their hobbies or their interests or their creative drive has no space and is not appreciated and has no value in the workplace. And also when we look into the whole gender discussions, men and women both have a male and a female part in themselves. But the organizations we have created in the last decades are focusing mainly mainly on the male energies, male characteristics, and everything female was not so appreciated. So men and women left their female parts at home, and even women try to be more male than their male peers in order to make a career.
We've heard that, yes.
Yeah, so it's about creating structures and environments where people feel safe. That's now an important word. People need to feel safe in order to bring their whole beingness, everything who they are, their vulnerability, their creativity, their sense of purpose. To bring all that into a company, you need to feel safe. And a lot of people in the current structures, they simply don't feel safe. There's not a safe space to be vulnerable. They feel that they would get judged or ridiculed, or worse, they would lose their job if they would show up in all their glory and all their weaknesses, because no one is perfect. But our ego, to go back to our brain, develops strategies where we all play this big game of being perfect and showing these images and trying so hard to please everyone and follow the rules, which is exhausting. The stress level and the related diseases caused by stress are sadly on a huge high right now, and that all goes back to the fact that most people don't bring their wholeness, their whole beingness to work.
See, and part of the issue there is when you talk to the typical manager and you talk to him about people bringing their wholeness, their personal life to work, you know, what they're thinking of is more time at the water cooler talking about the weekend. You know, they're thinking about less focus on what we're doing here. And they're not thinking about the benefit side, as you pointed out, of creativity, of new perspectives.
Intuition,
yes.
Spirituality, depths, all these kind of things. When you have a discussion in a boardroom where the only thing which matters are the Excel sheets, the numbers, and the PowerPoints, but someone has a strong gut feeling and a strong intuition, but the words gut feeling and intuition are considered wishy-washy, softy, female, whatever, and this person doesn't feel safe enough to voice that, then he maybe goes along with what the discussion was leading up to based on the numbers, and bang, they run into a big problem a few months later. He intuitively knew, but didn't have the safety, sense of safety, and therefore the courage to voice.
Well, and wasn't allowed the type of communication that it would have taken.
Exactly.
Before you go on to your third point, I don't want to interrupt you in the middle of it, so we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be right back here.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
Okay, we're back from our commercial, and we have Sylvia Becker-Hill here in the studio, and we're talking about organizational evolution. Wow, this is great. Okay, Sylvia, you were talking about this new type of organization, which you haven't really named yet, structure, and you've mentioned that there are three basic characteristics. You talked a little about self-management. You talked about striving for wholeness, which I have to think that my mind goes to healthy foods, but that's not what you were talking about. What's the third one?
The third one is the evolutionary purpose, which means there is the assumption that not only human beings have a sense of purpose and mission in life, that organizations as a whole also are thriving and growing towards fulfilling their purpose. And the challenge here for leaders is, in our old paradigms of the machine style organizations, we have, for example, the metaphor, a team is like sailing on a ship and the leader has to decide where to turn the sails so that we can go in the right directions.
Right.
So the leader is the one who gives the order and who gives the directions and who says what is the goal. In the new kind of organization, which in the moment we use the metaphor a living organism, the leader has to learn, and this is a huge challenge again for the leader's ego, is not to simply give a direction he thinks is the right one, rather to lean back, step back, and listen and observe and watch where all the information, the tendencies, the symptoms, what he's perceiving in the organization seems to want to go. That means the leader has to become a listener for the purpose which is unfolding in front of him and support that purpose. For example, when, let's say, a team comes up with an idea for an innovation, a new product or a new service, where in the past the leader would have looked at the proposal, would have made his due diligence and would have made a decision based on his own thinking, maybe would have asked one or two experts, but he would have made a decision, okay, I like the proposal, let's do it, here's the budget, or he would have said, no, sorry, we don't have the money for it, or I don't like the idea, whatever. He would have made a decision. In the new kind of organization, he would bring this whole proposal into the system, for example, if they have an internal social network online, and the people who had the idea, they would make presentations, so the whole organization would face that new idea, and out of the feedback, the conversations, and what the leader is hearing, listening, seeing, and watching, how the feedback and the communication and the reactions to that is, then they all would make together a decision, okay, let's move forward with that or not. So it means really listening and discovering the purpose of the tendency the organization is already moving towards to.
So is this a consensus building structure, that's the way decisions get made?
No. The way decisions are made in these organizations is called based on an advisory board. And now this is another challenging, horrifying thing probably for a lot of listeners. Everyone makes their own decision about their salary. Everyone, from the CEO down, because there is no down, this word doesn't fit in with there is no hierarchy. Everyone, once a year, will propose in a letter saying what he accomplished, what he provided as performance for the company, and would say, okay, this year I want, for example, a raise of 2%. And then in the different, let's say we have plans or departments, there would be advisory boards where these letters of around the salary would be collected, and then this person would get feedback. Maybe someone would then tell him, hey, you just adjusted your salary to the inflation, which is already going on, so it's not really a raise. I suggest you raise it more, maybe even more, 2%. And if you, Doug, for example, would have written a salary and you asked for 7 or 8% more, someone might would say, you know, Doug, compared to what everyone else is asking for, yours is pretty high. Maybe you want to reconsider. But no one would block you or forbid you to say, no, I think I've done such an amazing job this year, and I'm willing to prove myself in the next 12 months, I'm going for my 7%, and you would get it. So that means decisions are made by everyone personal. So everyone in the whole organization has the right and the ability and the power to make decisions, but under two conditions. They have to get advice and comments and feedback and input from the experts for that specific thing, whatever it is. In this example, was finances, the salary. And they have to discuss their idea, their proposal, whatever it is, with the people who are directly impacted by it. For example, if you are working in a plant, you're an engineer, you want to buy a new machine, you have to check in with finance departments, do you have the budget, you have to talk with a few other engineers, is that the right machine for the process you are having in your plant, and you have to communicate with the workers who will in the future work with this machine if they like it. And again, even though they all give you their input and maybe some pushbacks, you are ultimately having the position to make that decision. And that, again, is a big challenge for the ego. If you're a CEO of that company, you have to be willing to see you laughing.
You are really pushing me on my commitment to Theory Y. Really pushing me here. You know, the other thing that along with this is all of a sudden I'm thinking, boy, can we ever make a decision under this type of a structure in a timely way? I mean,
it's faster than consensus, much faster. It's like taking the best of both worlds. Yeah, in the past we either made the decision top down or we made a decision based on consensus. And so this here takes the best from both worlds. So you have the interaction and the exchange with others, but ultimately the decision stays with the individual, with you.
Okay. And one of the underlying assumptions I would assume behind all of this is that if we as a group in this organization are going to make individual decisions to be self-managed, then for us to be effective as an organization, we must share a common understanding of what the organization is about.
Yes.
What its objectives are, what its business plan is, what its culture is, or as the producer has said, what is the soul of the organization going to be? It would seem that there's a fundamental need to have an agreement there.
Yes.
Is that?
Yes, absolutely. And you said a very important, interesting word, which will change in this kind of organization as well. You said there needs to be a plan. Everyone needs to know the plan so that they know where to go. And here again, and believe me, I don't have the full final answers to everything you will ask me, because it's so early stage in this evolution. But the thing is, when it comes to plan, we talked about the evolutionary purpose. When you are not giving a straight direction early on, when you are coming from a place of listening and constantly adjusting to where you go, even the way organizations will plan has to fundamentally change. So not every department, every area has to plan. Only those who are tied to short-term budgets for certain areas. But in the long-term thinking, because you are listening for the purpose unfolding itself and you're constantly adjusting, plans are obsolete. And that's another challenge, because when you give up plans, you give up again control. So a key thing here is really for the leaders, how comfortable are we with feeling uncomfortable by giving up control?
if it's a tenth of what I'm feeling right now, yeah, the idea of not there not being plans is such a struggle for me, because in a sizable corporation, every action has an impact on another element, and a business plan, a common mission statement, whatever. Sort of ensures that they work together. Those individual decisions will get made in a way that achieves the whole.
Yes.
Not that the plan's infallible and can't be changed.
And it's hundreds or thousands of puzzle pieces who have to come together here to work. And it starts with how people get hired, how people get trained. HR has to rethink their strategies and their relationship with employees completely. And again, I'm focusing here from my expertise again and again on the ego. What companies, Frédéric Laloux researched, are doing, for example, in meetings is they have someone, let's call him an ego observer, who has a little symbol. A symbol is like two bells. It's like a gong, and we don't have one here to make a nice gonging sound. So there would be members in a meeting, when you have a meeting,
right,
and when they sense that someone is coming in their communication from a perspective of status, of fighting to be right, for their own individual bettering off, they would sound the symbol, and the rule is 2 minutes quietness, stillness, and everyone has to back off and ask himself, okay, the way I'm argumenting right now, do I have the bigger good of the whole organization in mind right now, or am I fighting for looking good, for a better salary, for my image, for my status? So everyone has to check in, do I have my ego at bay, do I manage my ego right now, or am I fighting for the needs of my ego? And this is all what they do. They are not blaming. They're not saying, hey, Michael, you are coming from your ego. Shut up. Yeah? They just make this sound, and everyone does this self-reflection. Oh, my gosh. This is kind of awareness training in organizations, which is unheard of. Does it work immediately in all organizations? Of course not. You have to train people first in communication, how they communicate respectful with each other in team meetings. For example, nonviolent communication is a model widely used by these organizations. In order to have people, to give people the tools, okay, how do we deal with egos who are running out of hand? Yeah, what do we do when someone gets triggered and loud and we have a conflict here in a room? Yeah, I mean, we are human, right?
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen, yeah, and that is messy. So these organizations are not perfect yet, yeah, and they maybe never be, because we are all humans, but they definitely offer a glimpse into a new way of working and relating with each other, which reduces stress, and give space of safety where people just be more creative. And this is the most fascinating fact. All companies Frederic Laloux has researched and looked into and analyzed, they are doing amazing. The bottom line, their success stories, their performance, it's amazing, which again would reinforce your theory why that you're right with that.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that really fascinated me about his book, is his research, and you mentioned it earlier, that he found companies throughout the country in unrelated industries that did not and have not communicated with each other, that independently yes. sort of stumbled upon this organizational evolution in an island by themselves. They all adopted it in some ways and did better.
Yes.
That it wasn't a joint movement that yes. we saw spreading yes. across the country. It was an individual movement, which is really amazing.
Yeah, for example, here for California, Morningstar is quite a known company here yes. in California. So most listeners, if you are eating ketchup or any kind of tomato paste, you probably had used some of their products. They haven't implemented all these principles from these new kind of organizations, but the self-management in all their plants completely. They have no bosses in their plants.
So in from what you've read in here, do you get the feeling that the adoption of this would probably take place in segments or within departments, units of a company that maybe it's, for instance, if I was working in a long-range planning department, it would be much easier to adopt this kind of thinking as a group than it might be if I was on the factory floor running equipment with a immediate deadline and everything is short term. Yes or no?
Laloux says very clearly that there are two conditions that the whole change can work if you are deliberately wanting to implement that. He says the number one, the CEO and the board, they have to be completely behind this whole idea, the whole concept. If the CEO or the board are not aligned with it, it will not work. Okay. He had in his book, and I will not mention the names, two companies which are sad examples, who were already operating for over 20 years according to these principles with high success, but in one case a new CEO came and he simply didn't like it. He wanted his old hierarchy and his old...
heard that before.
He wanted his old status bang and sense of control and his old used sense of power, because it's not that new leaders don't have power, it's just a different sense of it. So, and with the new CEO, he implemented a few structures of control mechanisms back into the company, and bang, they regressed. They are now back into a stage of a mix of like a machinery or like a family. But they are definitely not any longer like these new living organisms. And in the other case, it was a board where some board members were not happy with this sprinting ahead in evolution CEO, and he lost his job. So, it's not easy.
Okay, so an evolution is never easy, and it's never quick. By definition,
yes.
right?
Yeah, we are not talking here about a newest management trend for the next 10 years or something. We are talking here about tendencies and changes which will probably happen in the next 50 years gradually, but definitely global. You said Laloux looked into American companies. No, he really found globally companies in very different industries, from public schools over nursing organizations who serve old people, over a mental health institute in Germany, very different industries and very different cultures and languages across the board.
I might take exception with the fact that anything we would predict today that's going to take 50 years is going to probably take a heck of a lot less, because we just seem to be unable
yes.
to really come to grips with how fast things are changing.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, when we look back at our own life, I mean, yeah. 15 years ago, I think I just got my first cell phone, yeah. How did we live before that?
Well, you know, I mean, you look at it, if you look at the military style of organization, yes. what I want to call the command and control yes. style of organization, yes. it was the prevalent form of organization in and management in business until relatively recently.
Yes.
And the blame or the reason for the change for most people is blaming the newer generations who they say don't want to take orders. And that's why we're going through this, because we can't get them to do anything under a command and control. They're insisting on a more participative,
yes,
more involved, more ownership in the operations, which all is a move towards what you're explaining here today, it would seem.
Yes, and when you look into the histories, how many years or hundreds or thousands of years these changes needed, we are on an exponential curve.
Yes.
That means as closer we are to our times, as quicker the changes are happening. And right now, as I said before, we are having in the moment organizations of army style, machine style, family style, all in one economy, all beside each other. And we have now these new companies, and Frederic Laloux, you ask for the label, he calls them teal. He bases his whole philosophy of modeling these different organizations with colors, which is a big thought, school of thoughts from Spiral Dynamics, Ken Wilber, for the listeners who know Ken Wilber, the philosopher and graphs about Spiral Dynamics. So I don't want to go too deep into that to not confuse people here with all the philosophy. So Frederic Laloux calls them teal organizations. I like to stay with the metaphor of living organisms, because I think these metaphors makes it easier for listeners to see the differences. So the wolf packs, they were governing for thousands of years, whereas the army and already machine, family, this is all quite young compared to that.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, we didn't talk about this before, so if I'm off track, you can tell me. How does Maslow's theory work into this? If I understand Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, people have this first primary drive for shelter, safety, you know, those kinds of things, and until those are satisfied, they don't get involved in the self, in the self-gratification and,
yes,
and all of those other things. That doesn't sound consistent with what we're talking about here.
Well, the interesting thing is, just recently, a few weeks ago, by accident, in online research, I found several articles who said that Maslow himself has never put his needs in this picture, this image of a pyramid. We all know them. That's very interesting. He talked about the needs, but without that image. Someone else, and I couldn't figure out who did it, put them in this hierarchy, in this pyramid. So when you just see them as equal needs, and I found some blog posts where people were trying like different images, like with circles, concentric circles, or different bubbles. Like there's a big discussion out there how to organize these needs. The fact is that when you want a company who's thriving, with employees who bring high performance, people who can bring their whole self, their sense of purpose, self-actualization into that, they are performing better. Very simple.
Okay. So you are a coach and you work with business organizations. How do you use this? How are you manifesting this in your coaching?
So Frederic Laloux's work is quite fresh. It's really, I know it since a few months. But since years, my clients, as I said, they come to me with this personal pain of not feeling that everything they want to contribute has really space in their organizations. And so now with Frederic Laloux's work, I feel like I have finally some answers to show them where evolution is heading, and that what they perceive as an individual pain is really a society's problem. It's not that there are a few CEOs who are suffering. It's epidemic. Yeah, when we have more than 2/3 of employees being disengaged, yeah, these are not any longer a few. Yeah, so for me, it gives me a lot of inspiration and ideas to give direction, and ideas to think about and implement. And the work I do, because I come from this passion for the brain and neuroscience, I work with my clients who are leaders on their individual personal fears. Like, how do I lead when I give up control?
Right.
How can I still feel safe when I give others the power to make decisions? How do I need to communicate in meetings that I give direction but in a way that we don't nail us down again into a plan which we can't fulfill and have constantly to deviate from. So there are thousands of practical questions coming up which need translation, and I'm still in the research phase with my clients to figure it out. How will it work? And Frédéric Laloux gives us some puzzle pieces, some hints, but ultimately it's an open coaching process.
You know, it is a fascinating process. It is one that we are dealing with. I hate to think, and what I see is that the way in which the question is being answered in the workplace, the question of this isn't enough. What am I going to do next? What else should I be doing? Is the answer that people are jumping to, the assumption is, I got to go someplace else. The assumption, it isn't even, it's hardly being considered that, is there a way for you to be more involved where you're at in what you're doing that would give you the sense of fulfillment? The lack of sense of fulfillment is automatically, in my observation, causing people to look elsewhere than where they're at.
Yes, and that sadly is a bit of a childish approach to their own career management, because it's like the same with love life, where people go from one partnership to the next and faces and names are changing, but the patterns and why they fail are still the same. And this is the same with job hoppers who jump from one company to the next. You don't solve your issue with that. Only maybe if you're lucky to find one of these few teal organizations. I think the key is transparency in communication, and using things like social intranets inside organizations to figure out where is, again, the purpose of the organization, the climate, the culture of the organization heading towards to. And if you are an employee of in a hierarchy of lower power, you have to have communication with the CEO and the board. You can't make these big changes, sadly, from the bottom up. You have to have the CEO and the board on board. Sorry, the pun. On board to want this change, and to sell this is really to look into the examples of these highly successful companies who really show that long term the bottom line is better when you follow this evolutionary trend.
You know, and it is so sad that so many actions speak to just the opposite of what we're talking about here.
Yes.
So in other words, we see a huge concern today about, I'm going to say younger people and their use of social media. And they're being cautioned that you shouldn't be on Facebook, because then a company that you're going to apply to work for can see who you are. Yeah, in a sense, isn't that what they're saying?
Yes, yes.
They can see that you've made some mistakes. They can see you have a certain sense of humor. They can see that you are interested in things that are maybe inconsistent with what the company's doing. So you should hide that.
This is exactly what we were talking about, yeah, that most people feel like they can't bring their wholeness, their whole person into the company. This is exactly what we were talking about. So what needs to change there is the safety that I can express myself how I want. And there's another great book for listeners I would like to recommend, Hiring for Attitude.
Oh, yes.
Which is a book showing don't hire your people only for the skills, because skills you can teach, but attitude you can hardly teach. So when you hire new people, you have to make sure that their attitude fits to the culture of whatever company or organization you are in, independent which kind of phase of evolution you are in with your company. You always have a certain culture, and the attitude of your employees has to fit to that. And isn't it great through social media that you can make this research? You can see the attitude of someone, because when you see someone is posting certain quotes from a certain philosopher or a certain value system on Facebook constantly, that says something about their attitudes.
You know, I've always said that we hire for skills because we can test skills easily, and we fire for attitude.
Exactly.
Because we haven't looked at them.
Yes.
Yeah. Sylvia, it's been a pleasure having you today. As usual, the time flew by here. We're out of time, but quickly, how do people get a hold of you to find out more about what you're doing and to talk to you more about this?
The easiest thing is to go to my webpage, sylviabeckerhill.com, sylviabeckerhill.com. There's a contact sheet, or they can send me an email, sylvia@beckerhill, with a hyphen between beckerandhill.com.
And I will have all of that on our, when we post the podcast on Monday, we will have all of that up on our podcast site and our website so people can track you down.
Yes, and I, because it's all so fresh, I would love to hear some comments, some feedbacks, and even some questions. So I hope we will steer some brains up here to react.
Great. Well, look, this is Doug Gefeller. You're listening to our podcast, and thanks for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some other great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals, and frankly, anybody that's interesting, controversial, or breathing. We're interested in talking to you. We believe in theory why everybody is interesting and whole and healthy. Well, look, if you've missed our shows, go to dgefeller.podbeam. You know how to spell Gefeller, G-F-E-L-L-E-R.podbeam.com. So this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use immediately to help identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.